CJMQ 88.9 FM. My name is Sheila Q. On the phone with me now, Matthew Barber. I saw one of the coolest, I think it may be the coolest nod that I've seen, in my opinion, that an artist, a more recent contemporary artist has gotten in a really long time. And that's that your latest track was referred to as Wilbury-esque.
Nice.
Matthew, yeah. Barber, True Believer, this fantastic CD. You are going to be performing in the townships this weekend.
I am, yeah. Can't wait.
This first coming time, Saturday.
Well, second time technically. I played once on a bill with Joel Plaskett at Bishop's University a few years ago, but
really,
but it was that was a weird show. It was like an outdoor party at the end of school or something like that, and there was everybody was drunk, and we were all playing solo, so it was kind of weird.
That's sort of an odd combination of stuff, and playing on a campus is always really tricky.
Yeah. Well, it can be fun, but yeah, it wasn't the right context to be doing a solo show in, and we all made the best of it, and we had a good time, but I remember it being kind of an odd show.
So this weekend you're playing in Brome at the Fairview, which, and there's
I don't even know where Brome is. It's really fun to play shows, and I've been to a lot of different parts of the country over the last few years, and I kind of pride myself in that, but it's such a big country, there's still so many more little places, smaller places that I haven't been to yet, and it's really fun to play a show in a place where I don't know anyone and really don't know what to expect. But
well, if you're up for
I'm gonna have a good time no matter what, I know that.
Oh yeah, well, this is, you know what, if you're up for something a little on the mystical side, I think that you're about to play at the Salt of the Earth, so that's there's this sort of feel about it. So tell me about your now with this Wilbury-esque thing, this quote. I was like, to me, that really hit home because my family, I come from a family of music lovers, and my dad was a huge Traveling Wilburys fan, and I was like, you just got referred, literally, there was, in one word, there was a connection to Bob Dylan, Roy Orbison, Tom Petty, Jeff Lynne, George Harrison. Am I forgetting anybody like that?
I think you got him. Yeah, well, I think it's because... I think that's a reference to the first song on the album, I Think You're Gonna Feel My Love, which
yes.
we actually, Howie Beck, who produced it, and myself, when we were kind of devising how we were gonna go about presenting the song, we, that actually was kind of a point of reference for us, Handle Me With Care, not just as a sort of as a great pop song and like a great structure and a song that really just kind of keeps chugging along with hook after hook, and that's sort of how we wanted to do this song. And the particular person who wrote that, the review that I think you're drawing that from, I guess picked up on that. So I don't know.
I think I just had this moment thinking about that. If you think, like, when you think of that hooky thing and the way it carries you through the song, like there's a traveling aspect of being in a song. Sometimes you're going along with that song, and people talk about the rock a lot, but this is the role. If you think of the rock and roll aspect of things, people always go back to rock, but the role is just as important. And I think
well, thanks. Yeah, I'm happy with how that one turned out, but I think I like your point about that, because it's funny, it used to be, well, there used to be that there was a certain kind of music called rock and roll, and then eventually that sort of went away and the term became kind of rock in since the 90s. But it's really a different kind of music, and
yes.
from what the origins of that are. So like, and it's turned into sort of what I would call modern rock, which is, has been around for a while now. So it's earned its place as a genre of music, but it's not the same thing as rock and roll. And I think I'm personally a lot more interested in what would be considered rock and roll than rock without the roll. So
it's kind of like this. I don't know, it's to me there's like roots in that, like when you say rock and roll, it
sounds old fashioned now, and
it does.
I admit it, I like a lot of old fashioned things, so I'm not trying to hide that.
You know, my brother is a, well, I come from a family of kind of like doodlers. We all have our weird kind of doodle mania or things that we massacre. And my brother always ruined every Kleenex box in our whole house. And how he did that was he wrote rock and roll all over the Kleenex box. And he still has a bit of a doodle thing going on there. And so rock and roll has become, it's like a family expression. It's like a set form of salutation. And all the kids, there are six grandchildren in the family between the ages of almost 5 and 10. And they all, like, they learned to do the devil horns very, very, very young. This whole Dio-inspired thing. So I think, I don't know, I think rock and roll, the nice thing about it, because it has, it's more everyone-friendly.
Yeah.
You can branch out over the generations.
Yeah, it's like it's also something that's maybe it's not as aggressive as sort of just rock without the roll, and I think that reflects me as a person in general. I'm not a particularly aggressive person, and I really appreciate the melodic side of music and also the rhythm of it, but maybe in a more of a, I don't know. Well, now I'm getting a little sidetracked, but yeah.
You know what?
Maybe we should move on. We've established rock and roll is cool.
But you know what? It's funny that you should bring that. This is a proper rabbit trail, though, because melody, I think, is another aspect of things, and we can just maybe end it on the fact that, like, something that I think is that we're starting to hear a little bit more of, and that is that people are starting to warm up more to and look for again is the melody, and Royal Wood was on the show earlier. And now with your music as well, that's something that I think is really anchored in both of your styles. So that's the melody.
Well, it's really important. I mean, to me, that's what's always attracted me to music. You know, I mean, and, you know, you can look at music as being kind of melody and rhythm, and they are kind of equally important. But, you know, if I think depending on where you go in music, you kind of favor one over the other. And, you know, like, if you're more into kind of dance music and a lot of urban music and a lot of like rap and hip hop and even I would say funk and that kind of stuff, which is all totally awesome and I respect it, I think it's more geared towards people who are a little bit more into the rhythm side of things. And then, but if you're a little bit more into the melodic side of things, if you're a little more into the Beatles and maybe even possibly classical musical influences and stuff, then that's a little bit more what I'm into, I think, you know.
So what would
always,
you say?
Always having the melody sort of front and center in the way you present the music.
How is it, like, how's your musical progression gone to, like, from kind of discovering your own musical abilities, talents, and interests to doing this for a living? Like, what's that story?
Well, it's, I guess it's just something that I became enamored with as a teenager. For some reason, I mean, I think I liked music even when I was younger, but didn't fully get it, and I was, you know, had competing interests like sports and stuff. And then eventually when I got a little bit older, 15, 16, and I got a guitar and started trying to learn some of my favorite songs, you know, just kind of on my own by ear, and then I started writing songs. And then from then, it's just always been something that has been my number one passion in life. And I think for a long time, I didn't really accept that it was something that I could do to actually make any kind of money. And so, you know, I went to university and went to grad school and did some other things and day jobs and stuff when I moved to Toronto, but music was always there. And then I guess it was when I was in grad school in Hamilton, Ontario, actually. I lived there for a couple of years, and that's when I really kind of got out into the local music scene and got myself some gigs and just kind of went from there. And I moved to Toronto and had some good fortune and got hooked up with a few people who could help me out, and kind of got, you know, into the industry a little bit. And, you know, I released my first album, which was totally independent, and then got signed to a record deal. And then from there, I've now made 4 full-length albums, and I've toured across Canada a bunch of times and
won awards.
a little bit. Well, was nominated at least for a Juno Award, which was, you know, nice. It's just kind of certainly doesn't mean a whole lot when it comes down to the music, and I think most musicians recognize that, but it is kind of a notch on your belt professionally, and, you know, it kind of, it looks good to a certain sector of people.
Sure.
And it's just, it, well, I mean, it's nice to be acknowledged by by people, and it's nice to know people listen to your album even, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much good music out there. It's even, it's a blessing to even just have, like, to be able to do it and get a little bit of attention, because there's so many talented people doing the same thing that you're doing, you know? So it's a good time for music fans. Well, it's a good time for music makers too, because I mean, with that many good people around, it just sort of fuels everybody, I think. But yeah, it's an interesting business to be in.
All right. Well, without further ado, we should throw on some music so people can can sample this out. So we're going to start with this this brand new track, and that would be Matthew Barber with "I Think You're Gonna Feel My Love." You're listening to CJMQ 88.9 FM. This is DH Radio on CJMQ 88.9 FM. My name is Sheila Q, and now more from Matthew Barber. Matthew, who would you say, like, who are you listening to now? And what are you listening to it on? Like, are you listening on CDs? Are you listening on, or do you have an iPod? Or do you have a, or are you?
I got everything, you know. I have an iPod, and I have a record player. And
oh, God bless vinyl.
To be honest, those are probably my two most used ways of listening to music. But I do have a CD player too, although it's actually currently not working. So I'm.
What would be the three things that would be found in those three things? Like, what would you say is more, like, what's more vinyl and what's more towards CDs and what's more towards iPod that would be found in your collection?
In terms of content?
Yes, like in terms of content.
Well, I've got a lot of CDs. You know, I mean, I'm of the CD generation, you know. I mean, Well, I'm originally of the cassette generation, even.
Mixtapes.
The first music I ever bought when I was a kid was on cassettes, and I'm making mixtapes and everything. And then, you know, we made the transition to CDs at some point when I was in high school. And then, so I've amassed a lot of CDs, and I still have a bunch of them kind of piled up in the basement because I'm reluctant to get rid of them. But at the same time, I recognize that they are becoming kind of obsolete. But almost all of that I have imported into iTunes, and so I have it on, you know, that's why, because I now have this easier, more portable way of listening to all that stuff. But there's still a part of me that is reluctant to get rid of the actual
yeah.
CD. But I love collecting records too, and so I don't have a ton of records, but and they're not all in pristine condition or anything. I'm not like a real picky collector. I like to buy, if an album came out originally on vinyl, if it's an older album, my preference would be to have it on record, you know, rather than have it on CD, because that's just, if you can often get it for the same price or less, and, you know, that's the way it sort of was intended to be heard when it first came out, so I kind of like to listen to a lot of stuff on vinyl. So yeah,
it's got a very great unique sound. Actually, at the station, we just got outfitted for vinyl again, because we had vinyl back in the past, and now we've got turntables at work again, and it's just a different cool. It's a different quality and sound and experience too.
It is, and I just made vinyl of my latest release, True Believer, as well too, for the first time. I'd never actually gotten it together to press vinyl of any of my previous ones, but
is exciting. I love
that.
Yeah,
it's really exciting. Yeah, it's great. It's nice to hold the vinyl in your hands, and, you know, it looks good and it sounds good. And it's, you know, it's costs a little bit more to do it. It's sort of one of those things that, you know, you gotta really love it to do it, but it makes sense. And, you know, the people that do buy the vinyl are all really excited about it. And, you know, there is sort of a cluster of people that do prefer to listen to music that way, so. Yeah,
I missed the 45.
I want product for them, you know. I gotta have product for them.
my first purchase myself was When Doves Cry by Prince on 45 on vinyl, and Self Control by Laura Branigan. I just remember, like, you know, and I would love to see stuff come out on 45 again too. There was something about this whole idea of singles. Like, I loved having the albums as well, but the singles, there was something very pleasing about the size of a 45.
Yeah, I guess some people are still doing that. I don't know.
I haven't seen a new 45 in years.
People did it a bit in the 90s.
Yes.
I had some 45s in the 90s, but yeah, I don't know. Now it's, I mean, I do feel like there is a bit of a resurgence of vinyl, but it tends to be more album, full-length albums,
yes.
Like LPs, in terms of what I've seen.
But well, it's a big commitment. To
yeah.
Like to do that. So what would you? So what's in your collection? What do you listen? What do you listen to?
Oh well, that's a hard thing. I mean, I guess right now, most recently, I've been listening to Elvis and Nina Simone, because I just finished a biography of Nina Simone, and I'm right now reading volume 2 of a biography of Elvis. So I'm just kind of when I happen to be immersed in a biography of someone, that's all I really want to listen to. So.
Well, that creates that complete experience.
Yeah, exactly. And now with YouTube, you can like read about television appearances and stuff, and then you can actually check it out right there. It's pretty amazing. You
know? Go and find them.
Yeah,
Elvis. We had an interesting Elvis experience in our family recently, where I had, for some reason, decided to name my toilet Elvis, and I'd put this Elvis sticker on the toilet seat. And I had these Elvis-style sunglasses that were just perched on the back of the toilet. And my nieces and nephews came to stay over one night, and they were like, "Why does your toilet have an Elvis sticker?" I said, "Well, its name is Elvis." And I said, "Did you know Elvis? Like, the story goes, apparently." I said, "I don't even know if this is exactly true, but that Elvis died on the toilet." And they were so fascinated.
Is that an urban legend? No. Well, that is. You know what? Well, I haven't gotten there yet in the book.
Oh no!
So, but no, I've heard that. I've heard that before. So I'd like to see. I mean, this guy I trust. He's really done his research. So I'm gonna. I can get back to you on whether or not that's confirmed.
I want to know. Well, what happened is my nieces are 6, and they were very fascinated by this, and they went on to tell everyone, like anybody who would listen after this visit. Did you know that Elvis died on the toilet? And people would say, "Oh, really?" And they'd say, "Auntie Sheila's toilet." So they think that Elvis died in my bathroom. So, you know, it's I like that idea of getting a complete musical experience by listening to the music and reading about the artists as well. It's so fascinating to know the life stories of these
great
artists out there.
I'm really interested in kind of in the history of popular music and all the different characters and players that have been involved in it along the way. That's, you know, part of why I like to be in it myself, you know, aside from just my own thing. I like, you know, I like thinking about this kind of, this whole tradition, the tradition of this industry, which is kind of a crazy industry, but, you know, there's a lot of romance.
Oh, definitely. Hey, I have speaking of like kind of that sort of biography and the background and the story behind, that there is a short that I found online, that is you walking down railroad tracks singing Easily Bruised. Was that the one that you sang in that one? I think so.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, there is one.
What's the story behind that? Like that song, first of all, wow, it's that's some powerful stuff. That's very so earthy and so raw, and the video is too. It's got like that little short movie is beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. I'm glad you liked it. That was just a team of people in Athens, Georgia, who had a little video blog thing that they had going called Athens Soundies, and they would just, different people that were coming through town to do shows, they would just do this kind of guerrilla filming of them performing something somewhere around town in different locations, and it was something that they just did, and you know, we set it up ahead of time. I think someone who was doing kind of publicity for me got in touch with them, and I don't know, they were so it was really, and then they just posted the stuff on YouTube when it was done, and it turned out pretty well. We did 2 songs.
And
so, yeah,
did they?
Like lots of people actually have mentioned that they've seen it and that they liked it. So
it's lovely.
It
turned out really
to be
great.
A nice little bonus for me, because in this day and age, it's weird. I'm discovering that everybody wants videos all the time, and it's not my natural inclination really to make videos of everything and put it out there. But that's kind of the way the music business is going a little bit right now, I think. Video.
It's sort of like everything.
It's weird. It's like videos were really important for a while when they were big on television, and record labels were putting lots of money into videos. And then as the, sort of a few years ago, as the video stations sort of started dying, they were, you know, things were turning over more to like cable, and there were a million channels, and then the internet was getting bigger, and so then videos became not as important, and everyone was like, oh, they're just going to be on the internet now anyway, and that was sort of like somehow at first lesser than being on TV.
Mm-hmm.
But now in the last couple of years, I think it's actually completely seesawed, so that now TV is like totally irrelevant, but having like good videos are just part of every aspect of marketing now on the internet. That I don't know, I guess I'm just thinking this all out loud because I'm realizing it all for myself, and I'm realizing that I'm a little bit behind in all that because I don't totally have it together in terms of cranking out the videos. But
you know what?
I'm getting the sense that it's becoming more and more important. If you want to stay relevant, you have to have all kinds of video content of your band. And this is sort of a very recent thing, like in the last couple of years, I think, where it's become this important. But it's not necessarily high budget videos like it used to be in the 90s, where like your video had to be $50,000 if you're on a major label or something.
These crazy meatloaf videos.
Yeah, but now it's like they can be low budget, but they just have to be clever, and there has to be lots of them.
Oh, yes, but you know what? As someone who is a fan and has who's researched you even really recently as well, I think you have. Your content is good just the same. So anybody out there who wants to go and find Matthew Barber stuff, you can see it. And go to YouTube and look for Matthew Barber Easily Bruised, because it's really a beautiful it's a beautiful watch. It's a beautiful video. It's lovely. So we should play it.
Cool. All right. Sure.
Matthew Barber with Easily Bruised on CJMQ 88.9 FM. This is DH Radio on CJMQ 88.9 FM. My name is Sheila Q. Matthew Barber, you will be performing in Brome this weekend, this Saturday. Now, I've got the information here for all of you who need to know about it. Now, this is about one of the coolest things I've heard of in a long time. I enjoy music and I enjoy food, and there is going to be a cold buffet on site. That's pretty hot.
So, yeah.
Provided by Virgo Catering. So tickets for the show are $25 or $35 at the door. So subito presto, guys. Call these numbers. You can contact...
It's going to be like a fancy event. I'm not used to having my shows catered.
It's catered, man.
I figure that's just how they do it in Brome. I don't know.
Maybe. Well, townshipers love to eat, except for usually catering means there's beer, you know? So this is different.
Maybe there will be. I don't know. Hopefully there will be. I don't know.
So you can contact Virgo Catering at 1-450-243-0834. That's Virgo Catering at 450-243-0834, or via Darlene Bell at 450-521-5764. That's Darlene Bell at 450-521-5764. I will repeat that information for you. And it's happening at Fairview, which is on 345 Stagecoach Road, I believe, somewhere along those lines. Yep, in Brome. But there is a Dishpan Hands group on Facebook. And guys, anybody that's on there, I will put all this information up there. So you'll be able to get your fill of Matthew Barber this weekend. I think it's going to be a real... I don't know. I just get this feeling that this is going to have a great atmosphere. I was like, catered and this music? Hello. And Joanne McKell is opening for you, who seems to be getting lots of great reviews and apparently has a voice that could stop a Mack truck.
Cool.
So that's great.
All right. Well, that's news to me, but it sounds great. I'm looking forward to it.
Now, you're not getting out of here without the final four, so that's where we're going to go now.
Right.
So, Matthew Barber, what would you say is your greatest strength?
I think open mind.
That's good. That's very extremely useful. All right.
Yeah, I have an open mind.
So what would you say is your greatest weakness?
My greatest weakness is that I think sometimes I can get a little bit inward and maybe... a little bit scared of the outside world.
Which is, you know what, I think that kind of thing, like somebody could say, how could a performer do that? But I think part of the thing is that what you put out as a performer is something that's very personal, and is you can still manage to do it with fairly limited contact with the outside world. But when it comes to performing, that's a different thing.
That might sound a little bit extreme, but
I don't know, you know, it could be the case.
I can be shy.
Sure. So can I be, and nobody believes me, but it's true. I just really hide it under being ridiculous most of the time.
Yeah, you can't hide it. It's true. Just because you can get on stage and, you know, pour your heart out in front of a few hundred people, was, you know,
there could still be shame.
You could be, you know, making up for some other weakness in your life. I don't know. Anyway,
so
what's the next question?
Moving on. What is your favorite candy?
Coffee crisp. I know my sister likes dark chocolate. I think I actually technically probably do as well. I've also been getting into dark chocolate lately, but it's a more recent thing for me.
Yes.
And, you know, I've been loving coffee crisps since as long as I can remember.
First
going to a hockey rink when I was 7 years old or something.
And then you begged for the money to be able to buy one? Yeah.
It's always been my favorite chocolate bar. I don't know why.
Especially, and as you get older, with a coffee or a cup of tea, oh my God, then you know, my cousin's daughter, she probably would have been about six or so at the time, got really freaked out. At one point, there was a family get-together, and there had been a bunch of different snacky, junk foody things, and she came running over to her older sister and was like, there's coffee in this! And she was all so excited because she was allowed to eat it. We were kind of like, we're not literally giving you coffee, six-year-old child, but anyway... So what would you say what would you like to be remembered for?
I would like to be remembered for being someone who, you know, made a mark on the tradition of Canadian singer-songwriters. You know, I think that's a tradition that I, you know, admire very much, and that I've, you know, feel like I've been working towards, kind of working my way into. So I, you know, when it's all said and done, I'd like people to look back and I guess, yeah, think of me as someone who made some good records, put on some good shows, and was generally a supporter of you know, music in Canada.
Wow, that's rock and roll is what that is.
I don't know, maybe those are humble aspirations, but
I'm a fierce fan of Canadian rock and roll, and I think that's, you know, Canadian music, this is the scene, this is where it's at, exactly, so I think that's awesome. Well, okay, so, guys, Fairview, 345 Stagecoach Road, Brome, this Saturday, starts at 6 o'clock, tickets are $25, $35 at the door. You can contact Virgo Catering at 1-450-243-0834 or Darlene Bell at 450-521-5764. If you didn't get that information, then just check the Facebook group for Dishpan Hands. And if you're not a fan yet, become one. There you go. Matthew Barber, thank you so much. What a great interview. It was wonderful.
Right on. Thanks a lot, Sheila.
All right. See you Saturday night.
All right.
And we're gonna close off with, hang on a sec, I had figured that one out, One Little Piece of My Love. This is a great, great song. So thank you so much, and Saturday night, folks. Don't miss it.